I'm going to talk about, well, the title is Matrix Theory, ADS, CFT, and Higgs-Coulomb Equivalence. This is a, I'll focus on a paper with Hermann Verlinde. There's also a related paper with Ofer Aharoni, which you talked about here a month ago. Excuse me? Okay. Okay, there's related related work that discusses if you have an object on the Coulomb branch near the brain. I'll be precise what I mean about that afterwards. What's the scale on sort of on the decoupled theory? And I also use tools developed initially for the study of the instantons near the three brain in a very nice paper by these guys. So what are we trying to do? What would be the applications of the technique that I'll discuss? First, you can get the ADS-CFT as a change of variables in matrix theory. So in particular, I will do this for the 2-0 field theory as it relates to the ADS-7 process 4. But an example which I'll get to at the end, which is more interesting, is if you take a super Yang-Mills perturbation theory and you embed it in matrix theory. So for example, write down the matrix model for the four brains, which is a super Yang-Mills, then there's a straightforward change of variables which becomes reliable when the Tuft coupling is allowed, which takes it into a closed string theory. So you'll be able to see, I think fairly explicitly, how when the interactions in the super Yang-Mills become large and your excitations are really kind of collective excitations of W's, you get the dynamics of closed strings. Another thing I'll discuss is... Now, this would be closed string on the near horizon of the default ring. So, okay, I'll discuss the background when I get to it. So, what I'll also show you that there is some kind of version of a closed string non-commutative geometry. So, people who are familiar with the work on the instantons have seen that already for the D-1, D3 system. There, you should really have thought about it as some kind of approximation. Here, because we are working in matrix theory, it would be exact. What you'll get is that the coordinates of space-time don't really commute. And those are some other applications for singular conformal field theories, which I'm not going to discuss. So the two cases that I'll do, as I told you, one is the matrix model of the 2-0 conformal field theory. This is the ADHM sigma model. So quantum mechanics on the ADHM moduli space. This would be equivalent to a sort of gravitons on ADS-7 process 4. And the other case would be the matrix model for the four brains, which is closely related to this because the default brains should be thought of as the 2-0 field theory compactified on a circle. This would be a kind of a supersymmetric impurity system. So what you'll have is some 1+1-dimensional field theory on a circle with a bunch of impurities scattered. It's a kind of supersymmetric Condor problem. And this would be equivalent to closed strings Well, as expected on the near horizon of the default brain. Okay, so let's start from case A, which is simpler because this is a fairly straightforward quantum mechanical system. Let me remind you what exactly one can expect from matrix model of decoupled field theory. So the idea is basically we know how to write the matrix model for, you know, flat space 11-dimensional supergravity. We also know how to put several kinds of solitons in that background. So say I can put write the matrix model for an M fiber and then repeat the decoupling procedure that I do in space time. So I take M Planck to infinity. That gives me some, taking certain parameters in the quantum mechanics of the matrix model to infinity, and I try to analyze what I have left. I'll derive this more precisely, the model, a little bit later, but basically, what can you expect from matrix DS secure field theories? Say, versus an ADS description, say if it's a conformal field theory. So this would be a bit of propaganda, shameless propaganda, but in favor of DLCQs, of course. So what is this model? This model is quantum mechanics, some quantum mechanical sigma model. Say I discuss the 2-0 field theory, so this is also ADS7 process for. This is M theory compactified on something. So we're not really sure what we are doing in this case. That is, there's no systematic way of computing in M theory. In this case, we can discuss any number of 5 brains. But the price that we have to pay is that we need to take the Laude momentum limit. So this is what makes the system complicated. In this case, we have to work with large number of fibers. There's no definition of how to do anything for a finite number of fibers. So we expect that this would have some advantages for finite number of fibers. And indeed, what you get here is that you get the spectrum of chiral operators precisely. I mean, you see that they truncated the correct place. This is a fairly straightforward cohomology computation in quantum mechanics. In this case, there's the usual problem that you don't know where to truncate the spectrum. So if you use if you just assume that supergravity is good at all scales, you get an infinite number of operators. If you say I truncate my spectrum, well, the wavelength is of order the Planck scale, then you get much fewer operators than you want. So this is on the good side. There are some things that you can't compute exactly in the matrix model.
So where do you have to truncate the
11-dimensional gravity? Oh, n to some power times the Planck scale. Well, n to the minus some power times the Planck length, if you want to measure in wavelength. I don't know. Not that I know. So this is on the good side. The bad side is that here you have 8 supercharges because you're working in light cone. There's some units of momentum. You've broken some of the supersymmetry and the superconformal symmetry. And out of the conformal symmetry, you have, because you're looking at a compactified light cone, there's only an SL2R worth of of conformal generators. Here you have 32 supercharges, so you see the entire superconformal generators explicitly, and you see the entire conformal group. This is the problem. This is the main problem because this restricts you from going to a low amount of supersymmetry. You lose supersymmetries very quickly in the matrix model. This basically means that there are very few models that you can write here on this side, where there are many models that you can do here. And you know, then there are also, you know, how do you compute endpoint functions here? No one really knows how to do that. This is also a problem here, how to systematically compute endpoint functions to any order. You can do some leading orders here, but not much more than that. Okay, so it's sort of interesting to try and see whether you can merge the two in some way. So can I have a description of, say, gravitons moving on ADS7 cross S4, in which, for example, I'll see the correct truncation of the spectrum? That's what I'll try and argue is what happens if you look at the DLCQ of these field theories. Inside this DLCQ, there is a version of ADS7 cross S4 which truncates correctly the spectrum. So let's start with the gory details. So I'm going to begin with the 2-0 field theory. So how do I derive the model? Okay, I'll try and go rather quickly on this because I guess, how many people saw this? What? Well, no, that's a derivation of the 2-0 matrix model. Oh, not everyone at once. Okay. Okay, so okay, I'll try and just say the main aspect. So I want to discuss the DLCQ of the 2-0 conformal field theory. So we start with the DLCQ of say K M5 brains, still coupled to the bulk. This is step one. Then I'll try and decouple the bulk by taking M Planck to infinity. So this is a straightforward problem. Seiberg and Sen showed us what's the general way to get a matrix models of various objects, but this you can also just guess basically, and there's a single guess that makes any sense. I take the matrix model is given in terms of the D0 D4 system. The D0 is what we are used to from matrix theory. These describe the momentum modes on the null circle. And the D4 describes the M5 brain wrapping the null circle. So what I'll get at the end is, in my theory, there would be a sector which describes the DLCQ of the 2-0 field theory. So what is this? And we're interested, of course, in the quantum mechanics on the D0 brain in the presence of the D4 brain. The quantum mechanics that one gets is a dimensional reduction of an n equals 2 d equals 4 theory with the following spectrum. There's a un gauge multiplet, which for quantum mechanics is an A0 and 5 scalars. These are the 0-0 string which parameterize sort of the position of the string transfers to the default brain. So these parameterize motion like this. Then there's a hypermultiplet in the adjoint, which I'll denote X. These are again 0-0 strings which now, however, parameterize motion parallel to the default brain. And there's a hyper, okay, so these are 0-0. Then there's a hypermultiplet in the bifundamental of U, what was the notation? UK cross UN, which I'll denote this by Q, Q tilde, or maybe I'll sometimes put them in the same multiplet and denote this by Q alpha. These are, of course, the 0-4 strings. And all the couplings are determined by supersymmetry. Again, this is just a dimensional reduction. So what are the two sectors that we're interested in? Remember that we want to decouple a special sector which would correspond to the 2-0 field theory. The two branches, okay, there are also lots of mixed branches, but basically there are two types of branches. One is a Coulomb branch, which is X different from 0 y different from 0. These, of course, would have to be commuting in the moduli space approximation. And because there's a coupling y squared q squared, you have to impose that q equals 0. This coupling is the remnant of the kinetic term for the hypermultiplets in four dimensions. So in four dimensions, some of these y's would be vector field, and this is part of the kinetic term. And then there's another branch, which is the Higgs branch, in which x and q are different from 0, but y equals 0, again, because of this coupling. And the restrictions that you now have on x and q, these are the hypermultiplets of the theory. So there's a bunch of f and d terms, well, not in generally, but d terms, which have to be imposed to be 0, and then also need to mod out by un, by the gauge symmetry, to identify a gauge equivalent configurations. This clearly sort of corresponds to gravity in the bulk, because this is sort of your excitation and all your information about the state of the theory are away from the brain. This, on the other hand, because y equals 0, you would like to interpret as some energy living on the brain. And therefore, when you do the decoupling limit, which, okay, I'll get to in a second, what you would like to get is at the end of the day is that this is the DLCQ of the 2-0 field theory. That is, the DLCQ of the 2-0 field theory is just a sigma model on this space. This space is precisely the ADHM sigma model. And I'll describe this for a special case a little bit later. Okay, let's actually do the decoupling slightly more carefully. Okay. I won't do all the details. Just basically what happens when you do the decoupling is the following. You want to take, in your theory, a parameter like M Planck to infinity, keeping your energy on the brain fixed, some energy or length scale on the brain fixed. Keeping the energy or length scale on the brain fixed means that you keep x and q basically fixed, right? X is some position parallel to the brain, and it doesn't change. Q also measures some distances on the brain. So you want to take this limit. If you see how M Planck shows up in the matrix model, it basically shows up as the Jiang-Mills coupling of the theory. So what you want to take is Jiang-Mills to infinity with x and q fixed. Now what happens is the following. If I sit at some fixed point on the Higgs branch and I take g to infinity, then the mass of the W boson, which are the mass of the y's in this case, goes to infinity and they decouple from my theory. And also the f and d terms are imposed sort of with infinite penalty if you violate them. So what you end up basically is just with a sigma model on this manifold. All the interactions that had to do with the gauge theory sort of went away. So this is sort of the definition, and as I said, you can, for example, formulate some cohomology problem and count the number of chiral operators, and you get the precise answer for a finite number of fibrins. But what I'd like to do is explain. Yes. Yes. No, there's also a coupling yx squared. So this is actually the entire coupling. So I've cheated you a little bit in the sense that for generic points, you Higgs the gauge group completely, and that tells you that the mass of of all the W's goes to infinity. Now, there's a point, for example, x equals 0, q equals 0, which is where the Coulomb branch meets the Higgs branch. And this point will show up in a second, but in quantum mechanics, you're not terribly worried about that because your wave function isn't that affected by what happens at a single point. Well, that's a little bit of a cheat, but very roughly, because you have large fluctuations in your vacuum, you're not that worried about what happens at a single point. You ask what happens at a generic point in the moduli space. if you wish, you know, take this as a kind of conjecture and ask, can I test it? And you can test this by this counting of chiral operators. And I also show you exactly how this, so x and q equals 0 point shows up in a second.
Okay. What is the conjecture? Is it Coulomb branch to cut through
yes.
low energy?
Yes. When you take jingles to infinity, fixing the energy, which is equivalent to going to low energies. Yeah. There's all this issue of how you normalize the matrix model, right? Basically, what you would like at the end of the day to get some normalization where you have dt 1 over r dx squared sitting, for this, for example, sitting in your Lagrangian. In this unit, x should have dimension minus 1. So these are sort of physical distances in space-time, and you keep this dimension minus 1 object fixed when you take GM mills to infinity. Yes, you see, this is actually the same what you would usually keep fixed because, you know, there, you would worry whether there's something like this. And then, you know, you have to tell me whether you fix x or you fix x over g and mills, for example, in the action. But these are hypermultiplets, so this doesn't show up. You know? So keeping this physical distance is the same as keeping the usual hypermultiplet fixed. Okay, so let's do the decoupling slightly more carefully. For this, I would have to write down the Lagrangian, not all of it, but at least a significant chunk of it. So first I have a... Okay, and I would also not write it in terms of G and mills, rather I would rescale all the fields so that they have physical distances. So all the fields have dimension minus 1, the bosonic fields. And there would be a bunch of R sitting and M Planck sitting in various places. So this is my kinetic term for the gauge field. Then there's a kinetic term for the hypermultiplets. Then there's a bunch of interactions. Okay, I'll denote all of these. I mean, y and x with this subscript minus 1, which tells you what's their dimension. This is x. Okay, these are the two terms that I told you before. These are the ones that lifts the Coulomb branch when I go on the Higgs branch, and also a bunch of fermionic terms, which would be interesting. These are the superpartners of X. And these are the superpartners of Q. Okay, and if I didn't do any mistakes, then all the dimensions should work. This has M Planck cubed. Okay, this is my entire matrix model, keeping M Planck fixed. Now I want to take M Planck to infinity. And what I want to do is keep this term fixed, which means that I don't need to rescale x minus 1 and q in any way. And I want to see what happens to the rest of the fields. So what I would also insist is that I keep these terms, for example, the terms in which y couples to x and q, I'll also keep these terms finite. So what is convenient to define is a new coordinate, y2, which is m Planck cube y minus 1. This is something for people who did ADS-EFT is very familiar. This is the scaling that I need to do in order to focus on the new horizon geometry. So what I define is a certain new coordinate of dimension 2, which is the natural scaling for, if you wish, Higgs fields in a sixth dimension. And I keep this thing fixed while I take M Planck to infinity. So keeping this thing fixed is exactly like focusing on the new horizon geometry. So what does this do in the matrix model? It removes M Planck from all these interactions. And it introduces a 1 over m Planck to the 6 in this interaction. And now I want to take the limit m Planck going to infinity. So this term is basically removed. So what I have now is a Lagrangian in which all these vector multiplets, y and its fermion superpartner, aren't really fluctuating fields. Rather, they are sort of auxiliary fields. I can integrate them out precisely and get a Lagrangian in terms of x and q, and this is, of course, the sigma model. But the point is that you can try and think about this in a slightly different way. When you integrate out y, basically what you did is you set y2 to be some function on your Higgs branch. That is some function of x, q, and its fermions. Okay, I'll get to this in a second. But basically, whatever I had, you know, if I have an auxiliary variable and I integrate it out, it basically gets some kind of value. So the right way to think about it is as if I have this coordinate as a function on the Higgs branch. And what does this tell you? It tells you basically, suppose I take some wave function on my Higgs branch. That is, this describes, by the conjecture before, this describes some quanta of the 2,0 field theory. I could, for example, compute an expectation value of this form. And what this tells me is where does this particle move, for example, in some kind of near horizon geometry. So I can map all my states in the Higgs branch into states moving on the near horizon geometry. And I'll be slightly more precise about this. Yes, okay, I'll get to the fermion thing in a second. Yes. They don't present it this way. They generate these things sort of from thin air, but it's actually much easier to derive what they do using a procedure like this. Right. What they do, they write the ADHM sigma model, then they reinvent this y coordinate. But it's the same y coordinate that you get there, basically. Okay, so let's see, for simple cases, what this function y2 looks like. The Los Alamos bunch. Yes. You can get a little bit more than that if you look at operators that carry R charges. So, for example, it doesn't have to be homogeneous of operators that carry R charges. That will probe the different harmonics on the S on the S5 in their case. But there, you see, in their case, you're not saying, you're not making an exact statement about space-time. In the large n approximation, they start seeing this space. But for finite n, it's something a little bit different. And then you can say, okay, can I use this to learn anything about what really space-time looks like for finite n? And I don't think there's any answer for this. Since this is phrased in matrix model, this is the non-perturbative definition of ADS7 cross S4. I mean, the ADHM sigma model is the non-perturbative definition of ADS7 cross S4 in the matrix language, the DLCQ of that. The only question is, in what limit do you see the standard supergravity on ADS7 cross S4? Okay.
They're related to the six-dimensional theory. So in ADS7 directly, how do you even select from
theory? I'll get to this. I mean, it's usually stated that you can't do it, but in Poincaré coordinates, you can do that. Mm-hmm. And there's, you get the singularity, so there's a price that you pay, but it's not that bad. Okay, so the equation that one gets for this coordinate y2, okay, and this now would be something like y2. Okay, the equation that you get is just the equation of motion for y2. So you get something like, let's also do it for the case of u1, which I'll be most interested in. So you don't have this guy, and you don't have this guy. The X and its fermion superpartner just a decoupled U1 sector. This is N, the number of zero brains equals 1. Well, it depends how much of a symmetry you have. For these cases, in all cases with this amount of supersymmetry, looking at the lowest lying state is basically okay. Or you can ask, okay, then I'll look at a, you know, a bound state of a larger number. It usually gives the same answer, if only from the fact that supersymmetry basically determines the action. So what I get in this case, the relevant part in my Lagrangian is y2 squared, q squared plus the fermion y, fermion bar, and what you get is that these coordinates y are a fermion bilineal over q squared. So this is also something which should sort of be familiar, because this is the way the UV infrared relation manifests itself in matrix model. So suppose this is my ADHM sigma model. This is the ADHM space. And there's there's a certain special point, which is the origin, when all the instantons shrink to zero size. This is sort of like the UV of the theory. I've taken only point-like objects. This point sort of corresponds to Q squared equals zero, and basically, you know, if I fix the value of the fermions, because these would have some bunch of discrete values that they can take. These would sort of be some quantum numbers I'll discuss later, and I sort of try to go to the UV by shrinking Q. Basically, what you see that you're sort of pushed to the boundary, to very large values of Y. So this is certainly compatible with the infrared UV relation of the ADS CFD. But what I'd like to do is analyze this equality a little bit further and show you how exactly you see the ADS 7 crosses 4, and you know what exactly I mean. Do I mean when I say that sort of your coordinates of space-time become a non-commutative? So so I'll keep discussing the N0, and suppose I have a N4 worth of a 4 brains or 5 brains. I'll also denote this by K occasionally. My notation might fluctuate a little bit. So again, still these X fields, the hypermultiplet in the adjoint decouples from everything else in the theory, and what I have is just the bifundamental hypermultiplet. I'll suppress the flavor indices, but there's a QI where this is a U and FO index. But I'm not going to worry about that. And the equations that I have are Q squared. The F and D terms are this set of equations. And I mod all this by U1 gauge. And what one would like to show is in what sense is this space equivalent to, if you will, something which is GLCQ of ADS7 cross S4. So first I have to tell you, what exactly do I mean when I say the DLCQ of ADS7? And I see some people who were very unhappy when I heard before that you can do a light cone quantization of ADS7 process for. Again, the full DLCQ of ADS7 process for, if you wish, is the ADHM sigma model. Yes.
Before you go on, what is the theory? Are you doing just gravity? Super gravity on the space? Is it a string theory or anything?
Well,
what is the dynamics you're looking at? Linearized gravity?
In the case of ADS7 cross S4? Okay, so if I had done the full matrix thing, which is also fix N4 and take N0 to infinity and identify states whose energy goes like 1 over N4, then you would be doing the full quantum M theory on ADS7 process 4. Now, because I'm only looking at N0 equals 1, then I'm doing something which is much worse than any of the things that you've said, because I don't have any interactions, right? Because at the lowest unit of momenta, the particle has nothing to scatter into. So basically, all I'll be doing now is telling you what the spectrum of the theory is. If I wanted to include interactions, I would have to go to, say, compute three-point functions. Well, of quantum M theory on ADS7 process 4. In particular, I'm after. No. No. What you would get? You need to take the large N limit. What this would correspond to is the spectrum of the supergravity particles on ADS7 process 4, with the modifications that they are truncated at the correct place. So you see a little bit of the quantum spectrum. Okay, basically.
Just so I understand, by the way, that these Y coordinates, there are five of them, right?
Yes.
And
yes.
They're roughly speaking, in this language, the radial direction, radial
right.
And the
story. Yes.
Right.
Yes, basically. So what you're interested is in asking, for example, what's the spectrum of spherical harmonics on DS4? Where does it truncate? And basically, you sort of know the answer, right? Because I have a fermion bilinear. There's a finite number of times that I can, you know, apply that and still get non-zero. Right.
So that's just your point. It's kind of operator. It doesn't matter whether n is 1 or a million.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, I don't know how to do the N0 larger than 1, let alone the N0 going to infinity computation. So I can't answer you that question. That's a kind of generic problem in say, just matrix theory, right? What do you know about massive states in, you know, 11-dimensional M theory for matrix theory? So the answer is that you don't know that much. And, you know, I'm not saying that they know how to compute the N0 going to infinity limit. At this point, it's just showing an equivalent. At this point where I've just shown you that you can write Y in terms of variables on the Higgs branch, this is just a mapping of the two problems. Now there's an issue, can I get any additional mileage out of it? Can I show you that I've sort of gained something a little bit further than that? And that's what I'll try and show in the sense that A, you truncate the spectrum correctly, and this is a statement that will be true for any N0 and any N4. And, okay, there would also be this song and dance about non-commutative coordinates and blah, 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 which I'll get to in a second.
You need to do a figure, particularly for optimizing one circle, right? That's something, you argue that that's not important because you have to do something that's very 0.0 and N4.
No. Okay, I'll get to the DLCQ of ADS7 in a second. Okay, let me do this right now. Okay, so ADS7. So we want to do something like DLCQ of ADS7, and we're usually told that this is something very bad to do because there's a singularity. So, what's exactly is the singularity? So suppose this is the metric of ADS7. R is what one would call U squared plus D theta squared. So when I want to write associated with this, there is a certain differential equation, which is the wave equation of just a particle moving on this space. What you do in... Yes. Yes, yeah, so R is the, so the, there are six of these, and there's one of this, and this is the coordinates of the S4, which I won't really bother with too much at this point. So what I do when I want to think about the kind of flight cone description of this system, I write the differential operator as D plus, D minus, plus lots of other stuff. Typically, there would be some function of R sitting in front of this piece of the action, but I can sort of rescale this away. So I can write it as D plus D minus plus some other differential operator, let's call this D, acting on the function equals zero. When you go to light cone, you sort of you're sort of postulating that you're looking at functions that have a specific eigenvalue under D minus. So there is a null isometry in the Poincaré patch, but there's the issue of the singularity. There's a point where this isn't really an isometry. There's a fixed point of this isometry. But forgetting for a minute about this, what you would get is something which is, okay, so say I postulate that this is some P plus, and then I can solve for D minus. And what you get is that a relation like P plus, if you, you know, play with this operator, it turns out to be something like this. Okay, and okay, suppose I also have a particle of some given mass. So the price that you've paid is basically singularities like this inside, in sort of in your Hamiltonian. So I'll have here 1 over R in my Hamiltonian. This will now become the Lightcone Hamiltonian. But this isn't that catastrophic, depending what questions you ask in DLCQ. Because if, for example, I would go and ask, what's the ground state of the system? That has no meaning, because the ground state probes the entire space. But if, for example, I would ask you, suppose I have a wave packet very far from the origin where I have the singularity, then this gives me a perfectly well-defined evolution for this infinitesimal evolution for this wave packet. So I can't discuss its dynamics for very short periods of time until it falls into the singularity. What I would be after is not questions about the ground state, but rather questions that I can ask away from this singularity. And in that sense, I am allowed to do a DLCQ of this space in the Poincaré patch. Now, if you ask me, how does this relate to the picture in which I go to the universal covering, etc., I don't know. So, but there's also, right, but this is a kind of problem in the ADS-EFT. If you want to think about the theory as sitting on R4, which is, well, R6 in this case, which is what you need to assume in order to work on to do a DLCQ, you wouldn't be discussing the universal cover anyhow. So, okay.
Just to sort of clarify, I guess, for me, if you don't do an identification along any of these, you know, which have to be like coordinates, mm-hmm. then the thing you're calling the singularity is really just the coordinate singularity. Right?
Yes.
But you're actually doing the identification. You want this to be a compact, so all directions.
Right.
So then you actually do have a final.
Then it is a singularity, and you wouldn't really know how to, and I really don't know how to quantize the system completely, in the sense that I see this singularity in my Hamiltonian also. But all I'm saying is that for a subset of interesting questions, this singularity isn't, you know, catastrophic, right? I can ask about, this is because this is quantum mechanics. If I wanted to do field theory, then it would be very different, but DLCQ is just quantum mechanics, and I can explicitly, you know, write the wave functions that is localized away from the singularity. So I can do DLCQ. I would be more hesitant about, you know, whether I can do full light cone without the compact thing. But again, this is really an approximation. This singularity tells you that you are missing degrees of freedom, and you are indeed missing degrees of freedom. I'll show you which ones in a second. That you are missing degrees of freedom in the DLCQ, and that's why I'm saying that the full DLCQ of this background is just the ADHM sigma model. The rest is just, you know, is there an approximation in which I see gravity? Questions?
What is the restriction on the space in the cyphering theory that is equivalent to not looking at the visionary
singularity? Basically, it's, if you remember, we had before the relation that you are looking at the fermion bilinear over Q squared. So you basically need to look at small values of Q squared, so you're at large value of Y. I mean, R here is Y square root of Y squared. So basically what this thing does, if you remember, there was this picture. This is the ADHM, and here there's a singularity, which is Q squared equals zero, and this is some Q, which is different from zero, very large or something like that. So what this thing does, it basically takes you from this picture into a picture where you sort of resolve this region close to the singularity into an ADS7, well, a DLCQ of that. And in this case, you can describe things far outside here, which means that you can describe them very close to the singularity.
Right. So that Q corresponds to
small y. Yeah, near the singularity of that thing. And yeah, okay. So this is how you resolve the singularity in the 1+1 model, right? You're just asking about the singularity generating this continuum of states. So this is a kind of weak coupling duality in quantum mechanics, because you've changed the singularity, which is sort of strong coupling in quantum mechanics, into a smooth space. And when you're here, and when you have troubles here because of singularities, it's resolved by a smooth space in the Higgs branch. So this is what I'll say. This is what I mean when I say the DLCQ of ADS7 cross S4. So let me provide you with some more details about the ADHM sigma model. In particular, you see what are the degrees of freedom that one is missing to generate this singularity. So I have Q, and I have its fermion superpartner, and its symmetries. So there's a bunch of SU2s. And there's also the flavor symmetry. These two SU2s are rotations parallel to the D4 brain. So when I put a D0 brain, I can still do SO4 worth of rotations. And these are these two symmetries. These are the rotations transverse to the D4 brain, and the quantum numbers are something like this. And you see a sort of immediately a problem, because in this case I have UN4 acting on the states on the ADHM sigma model, but there is no such symmetry on the ADS. This is sort of a remnant of the gauge symmetry that you have on the boundary theory, some global part of the gauge symmetry, and you want to get rid of it. So the conjecture isn't precisely that these two are equal, rather that if I look at UN4 invariant states in this case, then these are equivalent to the states of gravitons moving on ADS7 cross S4. And what I'd like to do is build this correspondence a little bit more carefully and show you how I get this spectrum that truncates at the right place, and you know how I get the spherical harmonics on the S4, etc. So I want to take the ADHM sigma model and mod it out by the UN4 symmetry. So it's most convenient to pick a specific gauge for this. And initially I have Q and Q tilde, which this is a 2 by N4 matrix. The gauge that I'll choose is a certain Q having a Q and Q diagonal in the first 2x2 matrix. Using gauge invariance, I can choose Q to be real. These two are equal, and zero everything everywhere here. So I've sort of fixed my gauge. After I fix the gauge, what are the degrees of freedom that I have in the theory? There is one bosonic coordinate, which is Q. Then there are the superpartners of the N4 minus 2 coordinates that sit here. So I sort of fixed the gauge by fixing the bosonic coordinate. I can still have fermionic fluctuations around it. Then there's 4 times N4 minus 2 fermions, which I'll denote by nu. Okay, this is a spin 5 index. And this is a UN4 minus 2 index. Plus, I have some additional fermions. I'll call them eta, which are the if you wish, the super partners of everything else that was left in this 2x2 matrix. I won't be really interested in that term very much. And the symmetry that I have now, I still have U1 gauge symmetry, which acts now only on these fermions, A plus A U and 4 minus 2 global symmetry. Okay, and what I'm interested in are things that are invariant under these two symmetries. So I want to start building my space. Basically, I'm interested in how do I build the space of harmonics on S4 in this quantum mechanics. So I shouldn't worry about this Q coordinate. I have a single bosonic coordinate left after I gauge fix, and this is exactly the same as the radial coordinates of the ADS7. So this doesn't play any role in the coordinates on the S4. I have also these fermions eta. These would sort of correspond to the fermions of the particle moving on ADS7 cross, just on ADS7. So they also don't do anything as far as the S4 is concerned. These would just generate the... Okay, I'm cheating a little bit, but never mind. These don't make a huge difference. Also, basically what I'm interested in, the thing that I don't really know how to explain is the fact that in this case I have many more fermions, whereas in the ADS7 cross S4, in the sigma mod, in the DLCQ of that, I'll just have a finite number of fermions. I don't see any number of fermions that increase like N4 minus 2. So what will happen is that these fermions would generate, if you wish, the spherical harmonics on S4. So there I had, in the ADS7 cross S4, I had many more bosonic coordinates. I had an S4 worth of bosonic coordinates. Here I have many more fermionic coordinates, and these two systems should better be equivalent. So I want to build the spherical harmonics on S4 out of these coordinates. So I can... Okay, these are complex fermions. I can look at a vacuum that satisfies something like this. And the states that are invariant under both these symmetries are states of the following form. So I do two bosonic contractions, which is this would be L1 A1 AN4 minus 2 LN4 minus 2. This would be BJ. This would be B1 J1. Times this ground state. So, you see that each epsilon is invariant under SU and F, and the total and the fact that you have sort of two of these epsilon symbols is determined by the remaining U1 charge that you want to be zero. And again, what you would just like to see now, whether you can organize states like this into a harmonic functions on S4. And the way you do it is the following. Let's write, again, the expression for this y coordinate in terms of fermion bilineal and the q coordinate. So what you get is that y, a, b. Okay, in this notation, these two are folds of spin 5. And I'm looking at the anti-symmetric traceless representation, which gives me a 5, which is the vector of the 5 coordinates of... I mean, the 5 index of y. This thing is a fermion bilineal, which is this guy. Okay, minus the part in which you exchange A and B, minus the trace, divided by Q squared. So this is like the coordinate on the radial coordinate. This is the coordinate that joins the ADS7. So one identifies this term as a kind, which I'll denote by B, as a kind of unit coordinates on S4. And what you would like to see how this kind of fermionic coordinate organizes your spherical harmonics on S4.
What is that? J, B, S, or what?
J is the anti-symmetric tensor of spin phi, which is the same as the symplectic sp2 group. So there's an anti-symmetric form. Yes. Good. This has to be an S. Okay. So these are the two external indices, and they sort of raise and lower indices using the J symbol, basically. Okay, so these are sort of my, this if you wish, is the sort of non-perturbative definition of the coordinates on S4. And what I was trying to tell you about that the coordinates in space-time don't commute is just the statement that B A prime, these two, because these are now fermion bilinears, when I compute their commutator, it closes on another fermion bilinear. What I get here are basically the generators of SO5. So, if you wish, if I take this graviton, well, okay, I'm not sure there's much like words that can express what's going on here, but basically, you're interested in the question, you know, if I take two coordinates on S4, do these two commute? And the answer is no, they don't commute in the full definition of the theory. Okay, so what you would find out, which, if I'm not lynched, I may get to in a few minutes, is that if you compute a sum on A and B, if you compute, okay, square, if you compute the expectation value of this thing on the relevant state, this actually square goes like n squared. So it's not canonically normalized to be, you know, unit sphere radius. If I would normalize this to be a unit sphere radius, a unit sphere coordinate, then I would get a 1 over n squared times these generators. And this goes away in the large n limit. So in this sense, you regain usual coordinates. So, okay, so I'll just briefly try to tell you how these fermions actually organize themselves into spherical harmonics.
But then you're saying that this non-commutativity is a boring feature of the discretization,
right? No. It's an interesting feature of the discretization. No, I mean the discretization.
I mean, the boring was superfluous. Anything that's a feature of the discretization is not.
No. What you're asking is, I should have been more precise. This is N4. This is the number of four brains.
No,
it's not N0. It's N4. This is N4. So this is not something that you expect to go away. So this is a real feature of the theory. Excuse me? We're doing U1, but you know, you can ask, you know, what do I expect for the bound state, right? So I have a large number of the zero brain and they form a bound state. What's the effective action of that? The effective action of that is very roughly what they told you. So you expect this to persist for N0 going to infinity. Although it would be nice to have an explicit proof, which we don't have. Okay, the way to generate spherical harmonics is basically first to tell you what's the state that's invariant under SO5 and then act with these B operators and generate the rest of the spherical harmonics. And there's a natural choice for the SO5 invariant state, which is, its nickname would be the Fermi surface. And this would be something like a epsilon L1 to N4 minus 2, epsilon T1 to TN4 minus 2. And now I build something like J A1 B1 A1 L1 B1 T1. Okay, and I take a bunch of these and I multiply, and I have n of these, if you wish. So there's another j acting on this ground state plus. So I have 10^4 minus 2 of these objects. This is clearly a spin phi invariant. And I'll show you in a second that from this you can get... Okay, so this would be my SO5 invariant state. Now, how do I define the rest of the state? So suppose I give you some polynomial on the sphere, some traceless polynomial on the sphere. This gives me an irreducible representation. So if I have, I can think about it as something like this. Okay, this is just a usual commuting function on the sphere, and this matrix V is a symmetric traceless. So this is an irreducible representation. This is basically mapped into the same V, but now all these U's are replaced by the B coordinates. So I have B A1 B1 up to B AJ BJ acting on the spin 5 invariant state. This gives me a mapping between all the representations, and this you can compute exactly what this thing. I'll do this in a second. And now we can ask, for example, how do I see that the spectrum of operator truncates? And the spectrum of operator truncates because there's a finite number of B's that I can put here because these are fermions, and I have a number of finite number of fermions. When I'll start putting too much of those of these, I'll start getting zeros. And how much do you get? So I have the spin 5 invariant state. Now I can put n^4 minus 2 of these before I start getting zero. So basically what I get is that these fermions have n^4 minus 1 spherical, give me n^4 minus 1 spherical harmonic representation. And this is the correct truncation of the spectrum that one gets from field theory consideration. So that's basically why you expect it also to persist for n0 to be large. It's really this fermion structure of the coordinates, the fact that they don't commute, but they have this fermion bilinear structure, the thing that truncates the spectrum. So I would just like to finish this example by showing you a little bit more explicitly how the non-commutativity goes away in the limit that n goes to infinity. So if you look at what this thing really is, okay, let's denote this by B0, then each of these B's, if they would act directly on the plus state, they would annihilate it because it's a new bar state. So basically, I just need to worry about the commutator of these guys with B0. So this is a straightforward computation. If you ask what does this state actually look like in terms of the fermions, it looks like there's a bunch of epsilon. Then it looks like A1, B1. Okay, this would be L1, blah, blah, blah. This would be T1, blah, blah, blah. It would be L1, T1, A2, B2. L2, T2, and then up to some AJ, BJ, LJ, TJ, and then I'll start having again these B0s. On the plus thing. So now you can ask, okay, and suppose I act with another let's say with some other BAB. So this is if you wish, this is some kind of a non-gauge invariant coordinate, which is a kind of a funny concept because if you can try and think about generalizing the the ADS7 cross S4 to some kind of non-gauge invariant coordinate, you might be able to better understand the correspondence. So now we want to take one of these states and act on it with some BAB. And say some other B, C, D, and compute the commutator. Something like this. So suppose I take this BAB and I act on this state. So what can I have? I need to worry about commutators of B with this guy, and I need to worry about the commutator of the Bs with B0 again. So how many would I have of these? I would have of order J of these, and I'll have of order N 4 minus J of these guys. Now, if I'm working in the supergravity approximation, J is much, much smaller than N 4 minus J. If you remember, this is my maximal amount of momenta, and it's much, much louder than the Planck scale. In supergravity, I'm allowed to discuss only much lower momenta, so J has to be much, much smaller. So the only thing I need to worry about in this limit is only on the commutators of these external Bs with B zeros. So if I compute this thing, what I'll get here is that two of the B zeros would become BAB. There would be another BCD. And if I would compute it in the reverse order, I would, for example, have BCD, BAB. But because the B, I'll have ni A, ni B. Why don't I
erase?
Okay, two of the B zeros would become. I think someone should have corrected me about the mistake I did before. Okay, what I'll get here is some new A with an L, new B, T. This is if I'll just act with a single B, A, B. And then if I act with C and with B, C, D, I'll have this guy. And the rest would be B zeros. And if I do it in the reverse order, then it's just A and B flipping with C and D. But because all these fermions commute Benham, then this commutator, that if I'll be computing it for J much, much smaller than N, would basically be zero. In this way, when you go to the supergravity limit, you don't see any of these effects of the non-commutative geometry. So, or you could explain it through this, commutator, normalizing properly the coordinates of DS1 to get this factor of 1 over N squared in the commutator. That's what I was planning to say about the 2-0. There's another half hour of how to get closed strings from superangular perturbation theory.
This effect with the non-commutivity, you would also get into these things like ABS 5 and this 5.
If you did the matrix model of ABS 5 plus S 5, then yes.
And it would be finite in the number of five.
Yes.
Finite.
Yeah. But that's
what does it mean in the weekly topic thing theory?
That there is some sense in which. Good. So
very observable.
What do you. The spectrum of, the spectrum of Kaluza-Klein or truncates in the real string theory.
Yeah,
that's something that's an observable.
Yeah, right. But if you try to write an equation like that,
These are the gauge invariant coordinates. These are invariant under SUN 4. Okay, I'm not sure I understand what you're asking.
What do they
make?
Maybe what do they make?
These would be like the coordinates on the S 5.
Okay.
On the S 4 in the case of ADS 7 cross S 4. Okay, no, you're right. You find in this way you find yourself in a specific natural set of coordinates, if you wish. But that's also always the case in matrix theory, right? I mean, if you just have a single D zero brain and it moves in some coordinate, then that's not the value of the coordinate is not the gauge invariant statement. Nevertheless, there's a natural set of coordinates for that case.
Ultimately, just not the normal analogy of string theory at max scale, but it's one of the.
Well,
there were a lot of attempts to sort of here in other places, but it's not gauge invariant, right? So basically, the commutator string field and space like circulation. So
No, this
but in terms of the conclusion of one of the papers was that it must make sense of something like that.
This picks up a specific set of coordinates to answer your question.
Now, this seems to be like some observable statement. So my question is, in some ways, string theory related, what is observable statement?
This is some gauge fixed action. Some gauge fix. Some gauge fix something, right? I mean, because.
When we take, you would also say that we take the number of sequences in infinity, that goes away.
And you fixate the wavelength of the thing you're observing, then yes, it goes away.
So of course, all of the other papers were in the context of flat space string theory, which is that limit, right? So.
There should be a local statement about, you know, this is a kind of a global statement, right? I define, you know, these coordinates on the S4, and they commute to generators of symmetry, which is another global statement. If you ask me what's the local version of that, then I don't know what it is exactly, but something that you can try and do. Well, you can try and do something like this. You can try and ask. So you know that. Okay, this is a much more speculative thing. You know that in usually non-commutative geometry is stated as if you turn on some B field, right? B field is actually equivalent under gauge transformation to a field strength on the brain, right? So let's forget about the B field and just say we have a certain gauge theory in which we turned on something that has the quantum number of a field strength. And what you know that this does to the action is it takes some products. I don't know, it takes, for example, psi, a, mu. It will take this an expression like this into an integral into d mu psi e to the f I j di dj a mu. Okay, this acts on this guy, sine, this acts on this guy. Okay, it turns it into an expression like this. Okay. And what you can now ask, is it true that when I turn on a field strength in closed string, is my action, my low energy action, deformed in this way? And what I did there, if you don't want to think about it as a DLCQ of ADS7 constant 4, but rather as a D0 brain very close to a D4 brain, such that it feels large field strength, what this thing tells you is that, you know, for example, if there would be some G to some power standing here, you wouldn't be able to probe this non-commutative geometry using closed string object, but D-brains might probe it. And indeed, the statement there is that D-brains do probe this non-commutativity associated with field strength in closed string theory. And let me give you a kind of argument why you have terms like this. So suppose I want to, okay, this is a leaks water extensively, but you can try and make an argument like this. I take the sphere and I put, say, a bunch of vertex operator and I compute some vertex. Now I want to ask you, how is this modified in the presence of D-brains, right? And the way that it will be modified in the presence of D-brains is that you'll still put the same number of vertices, but you'll start putting in holes, right? And the question is, and what you want to ask is, okay, so each of these holes sort of give you some B times some insertion of B in the weak field limit, maybe potentially times additional derivatives. And now you can ask, does this define a new length scale? And it will define a new length scale if the coefficient here would be something like 1 over n factorial, so this resums to an exponential. And the argument that this is indeed the case is a kind of, like the kind of argument that Steve did for, you know, counting what's the volume of your moduli space. Right, basically, yes, yes. Yeah, it's basically a similar argument. Right. So, so what I would like to argue is that yes, this thing it does modify.
So the basic your answer, the original question is this non-commutativity is the usual one, magnetic
yes,
field, not the one that has to non-locality of string theory.
No, no, this is the one that's associated with field strength, definitely. It's not the usual n-string locality, but this is much lower than the string scale. And you need to probe it with the object, basically, to see that. Okay, yes? Right, so thinking about it as B is a little bit of a mistake. Think about it as F, as a field strength in your gauge theory. So, what? Okay, so in the four-brain it would be, you know, so there's a four-form, a five-form potential, and this would be D of A5 turned on. So this would really be the flux, not the vector potential.
So you non-commutize with, sorry, usually combining people P-brain with P minus two-brain charges, right?
Well, usually you put the two-form field strength. Yeah.
You put two-form field strength, and you give a two-form.
Okay.
So you want to turn on a three.
Well, what I'm saying is that this would be, in general, in closed string theory, when you turn on the field strength, you would start seeing effects like this. So, for example, there's another case of. Whichever field strength, in this case I turned on, you know, there's an A5, I mean, so the D4 is a source for A5, and there's a D of A5. Ramon field. Right, it doesn't matter. I mean, the closed string should feel all of these field strengths more or less the same. What? No. This was just an analogy of, you know, in non-commutative geometry, in the open string, you should think instead of a B field, turning on a B field, gauge it such that you turn on an F field, a field strength on the brain. Now forget about this. Now that we've just rephrased super Yang, you know, non-commutative geometry in the open string in terms of field strength rather than vector potential, then what I'm saying is that the analog statement in closed string is also when you turn on a field strength, which is some dA. Right? So it works in this case, and it also, for example, works for a WZW. If you try and write boundary state in WZW, there's also some funny business going on there. Right. So let's rephrase everything in terms of world volume field. So usual non-commutative geometry is such that it becomes non-commutative when you turn on the field strength in the theory, right? Now, what I'm suggesting is that this is the statement that transfers to closed strings, and this is what that computation tells you. So you turn on the field strength, right? There's a field strength through the S4 in this case, right? And that's the thing that makes it. Yes. No. Forget about the duality between this. And the field theory. Forget about that. Just ask. I have some gravity background. There's a field strength turned on in that case. How? What's the effect on that on low energy?
But we don't turn on field strength in the field theory. The field strength on the boundary theory.
Yes.
Or potential on the bulk theory. Now you're saying you turn on field strength on the boundary theory. The bulk theory is different than
in the. No. Well, I can do it like, you know. Well, I can only repeat what I tried to say before, which.
But you really think
it is not Planck scale non-commutativity? Oh, this is not Planck scale non-commutativity. This is a lower than that, right?
I mean, it goes away when M4 goes.
One of the
N is
like.
No, I mean, if you take n close to infinity, the ATS 7 tensor score becomes less, rather less than.
But the spin of the loop are getting small.
You can keep M Planck fixed and take N to infinity. So keep your energy fixed relative to M Planck and take N to infinity. So if it was a non-locality associated with M Planck, that would have remained, whereas this guy goes away. I think that's the best way of phrasing it.
How can you separate the Lomachenko constraints of the geometry? I mean, you can't have, it's not clear to say
whether
it's one of the geometry,
right? Right,
they have to be left together.
Yes, yes. So the problem is that, of course, once you turn on the Ramon-Ramon field strength, you start getting large back reactions, right? And you can't just turn it on and, you know, still have the same geometry. So that's why I said that what you can try and do is look for corrections to the effective action, right? Because corrections to the effective action, you're still expanding around your standard background. But then you can ask whether these corrections resum into giving you a new length scale. So this is a computation that you just do in flat space. I mean, the analog of this computation in a closed string is just something that you do in an expansion around flat space.
With
a Ramon-Ramon filter. No, it is a solution of the equation of motion, right? You're expanding around flat space. You're expanding out, you're just looking what are the higher order interaction terms around flat space. And this is something that you're allowed to do in the flat space conformal field theory. Okay, so I think we'll stop here.